sleep. I've been so bad, I see a skin in here and voices. I can't believe it's me. The guilty and the ghost say.
You don't want to touch my leg?
You can totally see my leg.
It's okay. It's okay if you don't want to touch my leg. No. No! Get those dogs out of here. Gross.
Find me on feetfinder.com.
I bet you can make some money with some beautiful things.
Nah, probably not.
Whatever. The weirdos like them. The uglier, the better.
How do you know that? Are you a weirdo?
That's how we're rich.
Hmm. Secretly rich?
Secretly rich.
Okay.
Surprise!
About time.
What if you got on, like, Feet Finders, like, you were being shady, and you got on Feet Finders being all sneaky, and then you see your wife's feet on there, and you didn't know they were on there? What would you do?
Just your feet?
Yeah.
I don't know. That's an awkward position to be in, I guess.
If you're on Feet Finders, it might be in an awkward position.
If you're on other things, you're going to be in awkward positions.
Maybe that's how we fund our podcast.
Feet Finder, maybe not.
Well, welcome back, guys. We kept saying we're going to record last week, and we never did. Last week was brutal. We'll try not to make that a habit. We were just busy with softball and kids and being tired and stuff coming up and all the fun things, so we just never got around to it. And so now we are doing this today. And guess what? We're still tired. Because we were out late last night. We didn't get home till 2-ish. Ish? 2-ish? Because we traveled about 3 hours away to go tour the Haunted Hill House in Mineral Wells.
Mm-hmm.
And I cannot wait to show you what we did, some experiences, some things that happened. It was very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
What'd you think?
And as we review the footage, maybe even some evidence.
We will see. There was one thing that happened. I've actually emailed them to see if they would send it to me. But we won't spend too much time on it because we're going to have a whole episode about it and you guys will not want to miss it. Yeah. We will definitely be going back, but I think what we want to do, the private tour where we're the only people there, because it was their spring tour, so you could pay, so many people could pay to go and tour the house. You get so much time in each room, you get to be with their investigators and they kind of help you, and it was really cool. It was a good experience to at least dip our toes in it.
Mm-hmm.
Figure it out. So
it was a lot of fun.
I can't wait to bring that to you guys. This episode's kind of a different one. I'll be completely honest. We did it because our son had a project, and then we both said, huh, I don't know anything about this.
Yeah.
I've lived in Texas for about just over 20 years now.
Mm-hmm.
You've been here...
Almost 20.
Almost 20.
Actually, exactly 20, because I moved here when I was 21.
There you go. So we didn't know anything about the Alamo. So after helping Jackson with his project, we're like, sure. Surely there's some dark history there.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can hear a lot of noise in the background, it is super windy here. I don't know if the mics will catch that or not.
I don't know. I couldn't hear it earlier. Maybe that tapping noise.
Maybe. So if you hear any weird noises, it's crazy out there today.
Or... it could be spirits.
They could have followed us home.
It's always a possibility.
But before we jump into that, I do have a kind of cool shout out to give. So I'm in a Facebook group, and it's for, like, I think it's actually called Spooky Moms. And it's a really cool group. Just kind of moms that have dark interests, and they just kind of talk about kids, life, dark things, where to get things. And somebody had asked for podcast recommendations. So, of course, shameless plug, shouted us out. And one of the moms commented on there and goes, "Oh my gosh, I listened to you guys on YouTube. I had no idea you were in this group." So,
oh, wow. That's funny.
I thought it was really cool. So shout out to Malia Brown. Thank you for the support. It was really cool.
Yeah, thanks.
Really neat. So, yeah.
Does it feel weird being recognized?
No, because it's online, so it's not really real. Now, if they came up to me in person, it'd probably be a lot weirder.
Yeah, well, yeah, definitely. Totally different experience.
But yeah, but it's still really cool.
Yeah.
But that's really the only shout-out that I have this week. Keep sending us. We've gotten a few more stories for our creepy tales at the end of the month, so I've got a few of those lined up. I think I've got a really cool person to bring in an interview for one of those. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to... We just got to figure out scheduling, so that'll be really cool.
Yeah. And then we met some really cool people last night, too, that I hope reach out to us.
Yes. Which, again, we don't want to spend a whole lot of time on it, but at the tour, we met this lady, and I'm guessing son, grandson, maybe, I don't know, child with her. I say child. Young teen, probably.
I think he said he was like 18 or 19.
Yeah.
Maybe 20.
Teenage. Anyways, super awesome people. They have actually toured that house, I think they said, like 6 or 7 different times.
Yeah, it was several times.
And they had a lot of cool footage, a lot of cool evidence that they've caught there. They've also been to the Bolton House in Jacksonville, which is just right down the road from us, and it's on our list to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of told them what we are about our podcast and asked them if they'd be interested in coming on, and gave them our name, and I'm hoping they reach out.
Yeah, me too.
They were so cool. So cool. I was going to talk more about it, but I'll save it for our episode. But yeah, that really cool people. So hopefully they reach out.
Mm-hmm.
Give us some more information.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yep. Anything else?
Not that I can think of.
I don't really either. I've been so busy, to be honest. I haven't really been watching a whole lot of, like, happening now, true crime. I know, I can't remember her name. Guthrie. I think Savannah Guthrie's the daughter. I can't remember her name. Her mom's still missing. They still haven't found her. We're like over a month now. So the chances, I hate to say it, and it breaks my heart, the chances of her still being alive are like much lower. And it seems like they still have no clue what happened to her, where she's at. So
that's sad.
I couldn't imagine. Couldn't imagine. Any recommendations for this week?
I haven't seen anything.
I've just been watching Will Trent. I've got 4 episodes left, maybe 3, and I'm completely caught up until they release the new ones.
Yeah. I mean, the new Fallout series is pretty good.
Yeah, I've watched bits and pieces when you're watching it at night, but mm-hmm. I always fall asleep, so I'm not.
I've been enjoying it.
Yeah. I'll have to start it over on my own terms. One of us is a night owl. One of us falls asleep as soon as their head hits the pillow.
Yeah.
That'd be me. 100%. If you turn a movie on, turn a TV show on, I'm good for about 20 minutes. And then that's it. That's all she wrote. I'm out. I'm done. He gets so frustrated.
Yeah, I've watched many movies multiple times.
Because I'll even start it the next day, like where I picked up, and I'll watch about 20 to 30 minutes. And then go to sleep again. Or we'll be watching a movie. I'm like, gosh, I think I've seen this before, but I have no idea what happens. He's like, yeah, because he fell asleep.
Yeah, pretty much.
Guilty. But it's all right. You still love me.
The jury's out on that one.
Wow. Okay. Okay. Just go see my ghost boyfriend.
Yeah, well, he was calling you beautiful last night, apparently.
With all that, I guess we'll go ahead and start. I didn't really know anything about the Alamo, let alone the famous people that were in it. So that was kind of interesting.
I mean, I had probably heard of it before, but since I was in Oklahoma most of my childhood, or all of my childhood, I guess, we didn't really learn a lot about Texas history that I can remember. Most of our history was focused on, like, Native American culture and things like that that I remember.
Yeah.
But the Alamo doesn't really stand out to me so much.
And I took Texas history, so when I came to Texas from Oklahoma, a lot of my history didn't count as a credit. Mm-hmm. So I had to retake a lot of history. Like I said, Oklahoma, I had Oklahoma history, but it didn't count. So I had to take Texas history. But I don't remember us covering the Alamo, or I wasn't paying attention. And yeah. I just got thrown into a new school my sophomore, junior year. So it was a lot.
Kind of makes me wonder if maybe it's just like one of those things that just kind of gets glanced over in a single chapter or something.
Yeah, you know? I'm sure they look at it more here in Texas than what they do in Oklahoma, too, because it's more Texas history.
I kind of remember something about it in school, but I don't necessarily remember it being like a big deal.
Yeah, but again, you were in Oklahoma and not Texas, so that makes more sense.
Yeah.
Like the Oklahoma City bombing, I remember that. Of course, that happened while we were in school, but each state has their own history, so I think they...
Were you even in school then?
What, had 90-something?
It was like 93.
Maybe I wasn't in school, but I remember, like, us talking about it.
I don't remember exactly what year it was, but...
I don't either.
They talked about it for a long time.
I remember us at least talking about it. I was in school for 9/11, though.
Yeah.
I'll never forget, I was in sixth grade... And we were at recess, and there was this kid named Steven, and I guess he was at a dentist appointment or something. Us at school, we didn't know anything about it, and the teachers weren't talking about it or telling us. So he came to school after his dentist appointment. Of course, he's seen it on TV when it happened, and I think we were at recess when he got there, and of course, he started telling everybody, and so everybody was, like, freaking out, like, why aren't the teachers telling us? And they basically told us, like, don't talk about it. You can talk to your parents about it when you get home. Like, it was very hush-hush. But I guess they were just kind of trying to protect us. I don't know.
Well, I mean, you also got to think about what was going through their mind at that time, too.
I can imagine.
A huge terror attack on the United States, which up until then was mostly unheard of.
Yeah. Their own fears and the unknown. Yeah, I couldn't imagine. So they probably... And everybody's parented differently, so they didn't probably want to cross those lines. So they let us go home, talk to our parents about it, and then the next day or whatever, we went back to school. We could at least talk about it within reason, I guess. So.
Right.
It's crazy. And now you see it on the TV, like, all the time. What a world.
Well, there's nothing really good to report news on anymore. Everything is just kind of crappy.
Yeah. it's all just a big shit show.
Unfortunately.
Well, with that said, let's go ahead and jump in to the Alamo. Maybe. Okay.
What do you got to say about the Alamo?
Let me tell you about the Alamo.
Tell me. Because all I know is what we covered on our son's project.
Which we kind of had a parenting fail and forgot to do. Like, they wanted us to label everything. Like, they're like, well, you didn't put a label on everything. And it's like, okay, well, you know what?
Yeah.
It was a really cool project. I would have given him an A. It was totally cool. He thought outside the box. Josh and him got a styrofoam block, and they, like, carved the Alamo into it, painted it. I think I've got a picture. If I do, I'll post it. They went online, ordered little Alamo guys with the Mexico flag and the Texas flag. And then we put a bunch of sand on the bottom and covered it with epoxy so that you could still see. It was really freaking cool. Hmm. Put it inside a box so it had the little arches for all the windows. He got an okay grade. They were really picky about everything. I'm going to blame it on him. Because I told those two they had it. I had enough on my plate. They could do it. And I don't think Dad read all the instructions.
Look, the instructions were very vague.
I thought so, too, because even when I glanced through it.
Ooh. Welcome to the Bellwitch Podcast, a show that covers the infamous legend of the historic Bellwitch haunting in southern United States in the 19th century. Where the Bell family experienced frightening happenings within their home. I Hang on a second. No, that's the wrong Bell Witch. This is a podcast about being a witchy pagan in the 21st century, airing bi-weekly, with different guests on each month sharing their pearls of wisdom and gems of knowledge from their very own witchy businesses. I call it a moot loot. Here we cover a wide range of pagan and witchcraft related topics, from sigils, spells and spirits to Reiki rituals and pagan parenting while camping in the bell tent named Delilah. It's got nothing to do with the Bell Witch from the 19th century in Tennessee that scared people to death in a little townhouse, which may or may not be true. Pretty cool story, but yeah, it's the wrong Bell Witch. This Bell Witch podcast is brought to you by Swales, the friendly green witch from Leeds, UK. A northern witch with a strong Yorkshire accent, a love of all things weird, spooky, magical, and a smelly dragon named Dave. So tune in every 2 weeks for a sprinkling of Yorkshire magic. Listen to the Bell Witch podcast with me, Swales, a friendly green witch, wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, anyways, back to the Alamo. In early 1836, tension in Texas had been building for years. The region, then part of Mexico, was filled with settlers who had come from the United States looking for land and opportunity. Many of them have been invited by the Mexican government decades earlier to help populate the sparsely settled territory of Texas. But over time, disagreements with the Mexican government began to grow. Mexico had outlawed slavery, tightened immigration rules, and began enforcing stricter control over Texas. When President Antonio López de Santa Anna moved toward a more centralized government, many Texans feared they were losing the rights they had once been promised, and frustration turned into rebellion. And even now, I think Texans are kind of known, just like, you know, we bear arms, and what's it, tread on us, or whatever.
Don't mess with Texas.
Yeah, don't mess with Texas. It's kind of kept that mentality, I would say. In October 1835, fighting broke out between Texian settlers and Mexican forces, beginning what became known as the Texas Revolution. And at the center of one of the most famous moments of that revolution stood a small Spanish mission in San Antonio, Texas, the Alamo. Which, before we go any further, we have to mention our Alamo trip, or what was supposed to be our Alamo trip.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't technically an Alamo trip, but we were going to add that to the trip.
Yes. So it was our first, like, big vacation with our kids. It was right after COVID. It was like 2021, maybe 2022.
It was probably 22.
It was like when you didn't have to wear masks everywhere anymore, and it was,
for the most part, opened everything back up.
Yeah. And I was finally comfortable. I was always weird. I never wanted to take the kids to, like, the beach or anything when they were super small, just because it stresses me out. And that, finally, our son was old enough, and so we're like, let's go on a big family vacation. Where'd we go? Corpus Christi. Mm-hmm. Like, let's go to Corpus Christi. On the way to Corpus Christi, we'll stop at San Antonio, go visit the Alamo. We'd never been. Yeah. It'd be really cool. Awesome. So we load up my car. We hit the road. We're not even 30 minutes from the house, and my car starts messing up. Mm-hmm. I don't even remember what it was. You'll have to say what it was. I don't even remember.
Well, before that, the air conditioner had just gone out.
Oh, yeah. Mind you, we live in Texas. Mm-hmm. 100 degrees outside. I think we went in, like, July.
It was June, July.
June,
July, something like that.
Heat of the summer.
Yep.
My air conditioner quit. And we kind of went back and forth. We're like, okay, we could fix it, but that's really going to cut into our budget. Or we can just go with the windows down and we'll be fine.
Mm-hmm.
Joke's on us. My window quit working, too. So you could roll it down, but you couldn't roll it back up. We're like, you know what? It's fine. It's fine. Let's go.
And it didn't work out to be fine.
So we stop at the Walmart, grab a few things for the trip as we're leaving. And I think you went to go turn my car off, but the fan kept blowing or something like that.
No, it was the opposite. The fan wasn't running at all, and the car was getting hot.
Okay. So we go to Walmart. This man can fix anything. I don't know how many times he's had to fix my car on the side of the road or a car or whatever. Like, if it's broke, he can fix it. I will say that. Like, I'm one of those women where, what do you mean your husband doesn't know how to do that? Like, that's not in our vocabulary. That's not me, sis. So he's fixing my car. And he rigs it up to where we can turn my car off, but to keep the fan blowing, he had to rig it up to where you have to physically unplug it from the battery to turn it off. Otherwise, it'll run my battery down. It's fine. We're fine. Our windows are rolled down. They're stuck down. That's okay. It's 100 degrees outside. It's cool. So we hit the road and we're headed to San Antonio. So I had booked our hotel ahead of time on a travel agency. And it's about a 6.5 hour drive there, I guess.
To Corpus Christi?
No, to San Antonio.
San Antonio is like 3.5.
Okay. Maybe for some reason, I was thinking it was a lot longer. Well, we're driving there, and guess what? It's the heat of summer, but it's also Texas. It decided to start raining.
Mm-hmm.
Remember those windows that are stuck? They ain't rolling up. We just tell the kids. It's cooling you off. I don't know what to tell you. Luckily, it wasn't raining too hard yet.
Yeah.
So then we go to the hotel that I booked with a travel agency ahead of time. And we go to check in. And the travel agency double booked the hotel room. And they had no rooms available.
Mm-hmm.
So I call them. And they're like, well, we can refund you your money. I said, I don't want a refund. I've got three kids that have been on the road for 4 or 5 hours at that point, after all the stops and everything. I need a hotel room.
But by that time, it had been almost 8 hours because we sat on the side of the road for 2.5 hours while I was fixing the car.
That's why it seemed so long. Yeah. So I go back and forth with this lady, and finally she said, okay, I'll find you a room. Just give me some time. Cool, cool, cool. We'll go do the river walk, eat dinner with the kids. By the time we're done, we can get in our hotel. Mind you, we're sweating profusely because it is hot and humid because it had been raining and now the sun's out, starting to go down. It's humid. And this is right after COVID. So we go to the river walk, and because it's been COVID, none of us have been out in public very much. And we're a family of anxiety. We all got the anxiety. Even on a normal good day, we all have the anxiety. So we start walking on the river walk, and it is completely packed. Our kids are panicking. They're freaking out. There's too many people. We finally decide, did we do the boat? I guess we did the boat ride first.
Yeah, we did the boat.
They loved the boat ride. It wasn't as packed, other than the drunk guy that was sitting behind Josh.
Mm-hmm.
He was obnoxious. We eat dinner. There's always one. Like this weekend.
Yeah.
So we eat dinner. I get the call. Your room's ready. You can go check in. Awesome. So we go to the hotel room that they said we're at now. It's a whole totally different hotel. Not a big deal. They still had a pool. It was outside instead of inside, but that's okay. We can handle that. By this time, it's probably 10 o'clock at night.
Roughly.
So instead of dragging all the kids out and dragging everything inside, I was like, just drop me off at the front door. I'll go in and get us checked in, and then we can unload everything. I go in, and they have our room. But because we used a travel agency, when they put the money on the account, they didn't put enough so the charge wouldn't go through. So even though I paid, the travel agency didn't put enough money so the room wouldn't go through.
Mm-hmm.
So at this point, I'm pissed. I am mad. I've been on the road all day with these kids. I'm hot. I just want to go to my room. And the lady at the desk was amazing. She was awesome. She's like, let me talk to him. I'll get it handled. Like she could tell I was done.
Oh yeah.
So she's like, let me talk to him. So she's yelling at him. She gets our room. Finally, she's making progress. They're like, you need to get this family. They've been on the road all day. Get them in their room, yada, yada, yada. So at this point, I'm like, I'm going to go check on my husband and kids, make sure they're okay. Because I've been in there for about an hour at this point.
It was a while. It may have been longer than that.
It was ridiculous. So I went outside, and had the truck already hit the thing at this point? I think so, because yeah, you guys told me.
Yeah, I think so.
So I go sit in the car, or go get in the car, and you could take it up at this point.
Well, at that point, we were under the, basically, the pavilion in front of the hotel, and it had a parking garage just past it, and there was a big pillar that had just been freshly re-rocked.
Yeah, it still said fresh paint, be careful, or something on it.
Fresh mortar,
I think. Yes, whatever. Fresh something.
But it was beautiful. And then me and the kids are sitting in the car, and then all of a sudden we hear this really loud crash. I turn around and look, and this guy in this truck just sideswiped the ever living shit out of it. And just, it crumbled to pieces. The whole side of his truck was just smashed in. And instead of going in and telling anybody, he just went right to the parking garage and right up to his room.
And it damaged his truck. Like, it was not like a little ding. Like,
oh no, it messed
up. It was bad. So when I went out there, Josh and the kids were telling me, I was like, well, we need to go tell the lady. That way they, I don't want them to think it's us, you know? And so we go tell the lady. She's like, are you serious? So she calls somebody down and they go look. And he said, with that much damage, it damaged their car. We'll be able to tell who did it. So they started checking cameras. And sure enough, we seen the truck the next day. And it had like a big old dent and crushed. And it scraped all the way down the side.
The whole way down the side.
So at this point, she said, don't make them wait in the car. Bring them inside. I can give them cookies and whatever while we wait. So I brought the kids in. She's like, don't worry about them being loud. Just let them loose. She fed them cookies and we waited. Finally got our room. By this time, it's almost midnight. And so I was like, it's too late. The pool's closed. We'll take you swimming in the morning and then we'll go to the Alamo.
We actually didn't get in our room till after 1.
Yeah, it was late. So I was like, not a big deal. We'll go swimming in the morning. We'll check out, go to the Alamo.
Mm-hmm.
Kids were disappointed, but okay, cool. They were tired at that point. They went to sleep. We get up the next morning to go swimming in the outside pool, and it is pouring down thunderstorm outside.
Oh, it was so bad.
So, of course, they're crying because they can't go swimming. Now we can't go to the Alamo because it was raining so hard. And so we're like, we'll just do it on the way home. We'll just keep going. So then we went the rest of the way to Corpus Christi. We got into our condo. Got so sunburnt. So sunburnt.
So sunburnt that I got sick.
Like, physically, I ended up taking the kids. We all got sunburnt, but I was diligent on sunscreen on me and the kids, and I kept telling him, you need to put sunscreen on. I'm fine. You need to put sunscreen on. No, I don't. I'm fine. Well, he literally got so sunburnt that he was like physically ill to the point where I had to take the kids to dinner out by myself that night.
I couldn't even get out of bed.
He couldn't get out of bed. It was so bad. And the kids got stung by jellyfish. And then the henna. Then the kids talk us into getting them henna. And of course, Jackson's like, oh, I don't even know.
Can't remember.
He's not very old. And he's being typical little brother and throwing a stuffed animal, and it smears the henna across the kids' arm. The little shop was great. They redid it for him. And we did that as we were leaving to go back home for vacation. Mind you, windows are still down. They still won't roll up. Well, of course, we're all sweating, and the kids fall asleep. And so their henna just smears all over their bodies. It was great. It was wonderful. It was a fun vacation, though. It really was.
As close to National Lampoon's vacation as you can possibly get.
100%. But it was fun.
Yeah.
Yep.
It was definitely a memory.
Yeah. They won't forget it.
They'll never forget that one.
Talk about it all the time. Yeah. So that was our experience with the Alamo. We never made it there. We keep saying we're going to go back.
Yeah. We need to.
We do. So back to the real, what happened, why it is the Alamo. At the center of one of the most famous moments of that revolution, but the Alamo wasn't originally built for war, which I didn't know that. I just thought it was built for the war, but it wasn't.
No, it wasn't.
Mm-mm.
I knew that. I read that somewhere.
The mission was founded in 1718 by Spanish missionaries and Franciscan friars.
Girl, you butcher so many names.
What is that? No, I know, but anyways, I looked it up and it was like they act on behalf of the Pope, basically, but I don't know
what how to pronounce
it. Skin. It looks like almost like a San Franciscan. San Franciscan?
I don't know.
I don't know either. Well, they were friars as Mission San Antonio de Valero. Its purpose was to convert local Native American tribes to Christianity and teach them Spanish culture and farming, along with other trade skills. The word Alamo actually means cottonwood trees in Spanish. And the mission eventually became known by that name because Spanish soldiers from Alamo de Perez were once stationed there. That was difficult.
I know.
I'll be okay.
It was difficult to listen to.
Okay. Well, for decades, the mission served as a religious and cultural center. But by the early 1800s, the mission had largely been abandoned. The buildings were eventually taken over by the military, and then they were used as a small fort. By 1836, the once peaceful mission had become a rough defensive compound surrounded by low stone walls. Inside were fewer than 200 defenders, and marching toward them was an army. Santa Anna determined to crush the rebellion quickly and decisively. Did I say determined? Did I say he was determined? Let me say it again.
I think you did, actually.
For some reason, it doesn't sound...
You messed it up. Start it over.
Santa Anna was determined to crush the rebellion quickly and decisively. He led thousands of soldiers north toward Texas in the winter of 1836.
Yeah, I read... There was multiple places that I looked where it said that one of them said there was like 1,500 mm-hmm. and another one said there was over 3,000. Then I read another one that said it was closer to 5,000. So who really knows?
And that's a common occurrence with the Battle at the Alamo is there's so much lore. Mm-hmm. There are so many stories and it's not really a whole lot definitively known
right.
what happened. So, very interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I guess back then you would just have, like, personal accounts of what may have happened, but a lot of time, I guess that trauma would cause people to remember things differently, maybe, in some cases.
Or just your own point of view, too.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, many of the soldiers were young, poorly equipped, and exhausted, but Santa Anna was determined to make an example out of the rebels. On February 23, 1836, his army arrived in San Antonio. A red flag was raised above the Mexican forces, a signal that no mercy would be given. The Alamo was surrounded, and inside the mission were Texian fighters, Tejano patriots, and volunteers from the United States. Among them were several men whose name would become legend.
Mm-hmm. Very household names, too.
Yeah. One was William B. Travis. William B. Travis was born on August 9th, 1809, in South Carolina. His family later moved to the frontier of Alabama. His early life was far from the heroic image history often paints. As a young man, Travis worked as a school teacher while studying law. By his late teens, he had opened a small law practice and even started a newspaper called the Claiborne Herald. On paper, his future looked promising, but behind the scenes, his life was unraveling. Travis married young. He quickly found himself deep in debt. That'll do it to you.
Yeah.
His newspaper failed, lawsuits piled up, and creditors were closing in. Facing financial ruin and possibly jail for unpaid debts, Travis made a drastic decision. In 1831, he left Alabama and moved to the Mexican territory of Texas, hoping for a fresh start. At the time, Texas was attracting American settlers, but tensions with the Mexican government were, of course, rising, and Travis soon became involved in the political disputes between settlers and Mexican authorities. His reputation grew during the early days of the Texas Rebellion. One of his major confrontations came during the Anahuac disturbances. Hope I said that right. When he openly challenged Mexican officials enforcing custom duties and laws. The conflict helped turn Travis into a symbol of resistance among Texian settlers, and by 1836, he had been given command of the Texian forces stationed at the Alamo. So I didn't really know as much about him.
Mm-hmm.
The next one, though, was Davy Crockett. I do know him.
Yep. I've heard a lot about him. In fact, there was a song, but I can't remember how it goes.
Davy Crockett. Yeah. We have the Davy Crockett National Forest over in Palestine, too. That's where the Texas Forest Service tour with the kids for work.
Yep.
It's pretty cool. Well, Davy Crockett. Let me tell you about Davy Crockett.
Shout out to the Texas forestry people.
Forestry people? where is it? Okay. Davy Crockett wasn't born into the heroic frontier life people imagine either. He was born in 1786 in what is now Greene County, Tennessee, to a struggling pioneer family constantly battling debt. When Crockett was about 13 years old, he actually ran away from home after getting in trouble at school. Rather than face punishment, he disappeared for nearly 3 years, working odd jobs, driving cattle, and helping farmers across Tennessee and Virginia.
Could you imagine being that young and starting your life like that?
No.
That would be so difficult.
Yes.
Especially then.
And even the guy before him, being a teenager and owning his own practice?
Yeah, that's crazy.
They were built different back then, man.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you had to be.
Meanwhile, ask our little hood rats to take their freaking trash to the dumpster.
Mm-hmm.
And they act like it's...
They act like we're trying to cut off one of their limbs.
Yeah. But you know what? At your age, William B. Travis owned his own practice and newspaper. What are you doing with your life?
And the other guy, he moved out.
He moved out.
Had a full-time job for 3 years.
Well, during that time, he never learned to properly read or write, me neither, something that would follow him throughout his life. Later, when he became a politician, he relied heavily on speeches and storytelling rather than written debates. He was a legendary hunter out of necessity. Crockett's hunting reputation wasn't just sport, but it was his survival. On the frontier, meat and animal hides were often the difference between poverty and stability. One winter, he reportedly killed over 100 bears, selling their hides to make money. Killing one bear is pretty badass.
Mm-hmm.
To kill over 100, that's pretty crazy.
Did you ever watch that movie, Revenant?
Yes.
Oh, man, the bear scene in that is so nuts.
It makes me...
Dude, I watched that in the theater.
I know. You're in California then.
And the sound that it makes is... disturbing.
Ugh, no thank you.
It is so disturbing.
Well, these stories helped create the myth of Crockett as a larger-than-life frontiersman wearing a coonskin hat. Cap. I was going to say hat and cap at the same time.
You did.
Hap. Okay. Interestingly, historians believe he rarely wore the famous coonskin cap in real life.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of disappointing. That image was popularized decades later in stage plays and eventually TV shows. Before politics, Crockett served as a scout in the Creek War, fighting under future president Andrew Jackson. Crockett's role was mostly scouting and supply gathering, not major battlefield command. He later described witnessing the devastation of villages and the harsh realities of frontier warfare, and the experiences that deeply affected him. Ironically, Crockett would later become one of Jackson's political enemies. In 1827, Crockett was elected to the United States House of Representatives. What made him unusual was that he frequently voted against the powerful political machine ran by Andrew Jackson. The biggest clash came over the Indian Removal Act in 1830. Crockett publicly opposed the law that forced Native American tribes from their lands into the southeastern United States. It was a risky political move, and Jackson was extremely popular, and opposing him cost Crockett support back home in Tennessee. And by the 1830s, Crockett had been something of like a national celebrity, basically. Plays have exaggerated stories that portrayed him as a wild frontier hero. One stage production titled The Lion of the West featured a character clearly based on Crockett. I bet your dad had seen that. It actually leaned into the fame, telling tales, and even publishing a partly autobiographical book. I'm getting there. Just give me a minute.
Say it about five more times and you might get it.
They know what I'm talking about. A narrative of the life of David Crockett. But the fame also made some politicians treat him like a joke. In 1835, Crockett ran for Congress again, and he lost his seat. Frustrated and angry with Tennessee voters, he reportedly said, "You may all go to hell, and I will go to Texas." Which, Texas in the summer is pretty close to hell.
Borderline. Definitely borderline.
Like many settlers, he likely hoped to rebuild his fortune and political career. Did I read that right again? I'm so tired, I don't remember what I'm saying.
Hey, ghostly gang. The case is cold, and the vibes are haunted.
We've got murder notes, EMF spikes, and no business being awake this late.
But thanks to W Energy Drink, we have clean energy with no crash, so we can hyperfixate on timelines, suspects, and whether or not the attic is haunted or a squirrel is hiding his nuts.
The flavors are criminally good. Like, we destroyed the evidence good. Not a drop could be found.
It's zero sugar, no artificial colors, and delivers terrifying levels of focus and mental clarity. Perfect for connecting red string and angering spirits.
Hit dubby.gg.com.
Use promo code GGP for 10% off.
Dubby, fueling guilty in the ghostly while the killer's still out there.
And the house is still haunted.
Like many settlers, he likely hoped to rebuild his fortune and political career. The provisional Texas government had promised land to volunteers willing to help defend the region during the growing rebellion against Antonio Lopez de Santa Anna. In late 1835, Crockett traveled west with a small group of Tennessee volunteers. Along the journey, witnesses describe Crockett as good-humored, musical, and charismatic, often playing his fiddle and telling stories around campfires.
I had heard that, too.
You did?
Mm-hmm. Apparently he was pretty decent with a fiddle, my understanding.
Well, then we have James Jim Bowie. Before he became a legend of Texas, James Bowie lived a life filled with land deals, duels, and danger. Bowie was born in 1796 in Kentucky, but he grew up in the frontier in Louisiana. Like many young men on the American frontier, Bowie chased opportunity wherever he could find it. In his early years, he worked as a trader, land speculator, and adventurer, often operating in the gray areas of frontier law. One of the most controversial chapters of his early life involved illegally buying enslaved people from pirate smugglers and then reselling them for profit through loopholes in the U.S. law. Despite these questionable dealings, Bowie eventually built a reputation as a bold frontiersman and fighter. Bowie's national fame came years before Texas independence during a violent confrontation known as the Sandbar Fight in 1827 near Natchez, Mississippi. The event started as a formal duel between two men, but quickly spiraled into a chaotic gunfight involving several participants. Bowie was shot, stabbed, and beaten, but somehow survived.
Damn.
It's like the 50 Cent of the Old West.
I guess so.
He even managed to kill one of his attackers.
Call him 2-Bit instead of 50 Cent.
2-Bit. Okay. He even managed to kill one of his attackers with a large knife. Stories of the fight spread quickly across the frontier, turning Bowie into a legend. That knife would later become famous as the Bowie knife. a large fighting blade that became one of the most iconic weapons of the American frontier. In the late 1820s, Bowie moved to Texas, which was then part of Mexico. Then he married into a powerful Mexican family, and his bride was Ursula Veramendi, the daughter of a prominent political leader in San Antonio. For a time, Bowie lived a relatively comfortable life as a businessman and landowner, but tragedy struck when his wife and children and several relatives died during the cholera epidemic in 1833. The loss devastated Bowie and changed the course of his life. He gained a reputation as a fearless fighter during early battles of the Revolution, including the Battle of Concepcion in 18...
I don't know. That's how it's spelled.
In 1835. Let me get a drink.
I'm going to assume you got to throw a little flair on that word.
It does have a little chico thing.
Yeah, it's probably confection then or something. I don't know. I just work here.
That's above your pay grade. Obviously above mine, too. His experience and popularity among volunteers. Bowie was placed in command of Texian forces at the Alamo alongside the much younger officer William B. Travis. But their partnership was rocky. Bowie commanded the volunteers, while Travis commanded the regular army troops, leading to disagreements over leadership. Not long after Mexican forces surrounded the Alamo, Bowie became gravely ill. Historians still debate what caused it. Some believe it was typhoid fever, pneumonia, or tuberculosis. Whatever the cause, Bowie became too sick to stand and was confined to the bed inside the mission. When the Mexican army launched its final assault on March 6, 1836, Bowie was reportedly still bedridden. Accounts differ about what happened next. Some reports say he fired pistols from the bed before being killed, while others claim Mexican soldiers found and executed him in his room. Either way, Bowie died along with nearly every defender during the Battle of the Alamo. But those weren't the only men inside the Alamo. Tejano patriots, Texans of Mexican descent, also fought alongside the Texian rebels. One of the most notable was Juan Seguin, who strongly supported Texas independence. There were also farmers, blacksmiths, merchants, and young adventurers. Some were barely out of their teens. And again, to think about our teenagers, who I can't even get up to do their chores, and then you've got these ones that are willing to put their life on the line for their beliefs. It's just crazy how different things are now.
Yep. It is. I mean, it's a totally different world than it was then.
Yeah.
That's why it was called the Wild West.
Wild, Wild West. One defender, James Bonham, rode through enemy lines to deliver a message and returned to the Alamo, fully aware it might mean his death. Another man inside the walls was, I wonder if that's a typo, Almarin Dickinson, an artillery officer whose wife, Susan Dickinson, and infant daughter were also at the mission. Despite the bravery of the defenders, things inside the Alamo weren't exactly ideal. The Texian fighters were badly outnumbered. Santa Anna had at least 1,500 soldiers. Some estimates suggest as many as 4,000 to 6,000 troops that were eventually involved in the siege. Meanwhile, the defenders numbered roughly... I gotta look this way. Meanwhile, the defenders numbered roughly 180 to 200 men. Even worse, the mission itself was not designed to withstand serious military siege. The walls were incomplete in places, and some sections were barely strong enough to stop the artillery fire. Supplies were also running low. For 13 days, Mexican artillery bombarded the Alamo with cannons day and night. The constant explosions shook the mission walls and kept the defenders awake. During this time, William Travis sent out desperate letters asking for reinforcement. One of the most famous letters written on February 24th was addressed to the people of Texas and all Americans in the world. In it, Travis declared that he would never surrender or retreat. Only small groups of reinforcements ever managed to reach the mission, adding about 30 more defenders. Which, that sucks. If you're up against anywhere from 1,500 to 6,000 people, you're like, here's 30 guys. This is what we got. Yeah, it's not great. One of the most famous stories from the siege, though, historians still debate its accuracy, is the legend of Travis drawing a line in the sand. According to later accounts, Travis gathered the men and told them, anyone willing to stay and fight to the death should step across the line, and nearly every man did. Only one defender, Moses Rose, was said to have slipped away during the night. Meanwhile, Juan Seguin had already been sent out earlier to gather reinforcements for the Texian army. That decision would ultimately save his life. Is that the guy you were talking about the other day?
No, there was somebody else I was talking about. I can't remember.
And again, it just depends on where you get your information too, right? Because it's wild. Like, I would listen to one, or I'd watch one YouTube video, or listen to one podcast, and they'd be like a historian or whatever, but they would have their own version of the story, I guess.
Yeah, that's what I found for the most part of my research too, is just there's not really any clear information on some things.
Yeah.
Like, it's almost like some of the actual history has seemed to have been skewed.
Yeah.
One way or another.
Yeah.
And it may not necessarily be because of the original story so much as it's been told 5 million times.
Right, right. Well, just before dawn, March 6, 1836, the final assault began. Around 5 a.m., Santa Anna ordered his troops forward. Mexican soldiers advanced in several waves, moving towards the Alamo in the darkness. Cannons fired, muskets roared, and smoke filled the air. For a short time, the defenders held their ground, but the sheer number of Mexican troops eventually overwhelmed them. Soldiers pushed ladders against the walls and climbed over the defenses, pouring into the mission compound. The fighting quickly turned brutal and chaotic, and the entire battle lasted less than 2 hours. William Travis was among the first to die, reportedly shot while defending the north wall. Jim Bowie, too sick to fight, was killed in his sickbed when Mexican soldiers stormed the barracks. The exact fate of Davy Bowie is still debated. Some accounts say he died fighting with his rifle like a club. Others claim he and several men were captured alive and later executed on Santa Anna's orders. By the end of the morning, nearly every defender inside the Alamo was dead. Historians estimate between 182 to 250 Texian defenders were killed, and the Mexican casualties were also heavy, possibly 400 to 600 soldiers. Which, that's pretty good. I mean, for the Texians to only have so many soldiers to fight, and then they got, 400 to 600 soldiers against the other side, that's like two apiece. That's crazy. Don't laugh at me. After the battle, Santa Anna ordered the bodies of the Texian... I thought this was interesting. And I found this. It was... I think this one was a podcast. Oh, I should have put down the name and I forgot. But it's... He's a historian. Like, that's what he does. It's everything with the Alamo. He actually works at the Alamo. And so he just collects and goes through archives and stuff. So after the battle, Santa Anna ordered the bodies of the Texians to be gathered by civilians and then burned in a funeral pyres outside the mission walls. Locals reported the smell of smoke hanging over the city for days. So not only did you just watch all these people kill themselves, as a civilian, it's now your job to go collect all the bodies and pile them up and set them on fire.
Mm-hmm.
No wonder why they had their own law firms at 16 years old.
They had to grow up fast.
Records and accounts suggest the pyres were located where E-Commerce Street is today on the Riverside. Now, River Central Mall stands there, and where the parking garage stands is where they believe the pyres were at. And I love that kind of stuff, to where they think they know where it happened in history, and then you see what it is today, and it's like the history that happened there, and mm-hmm. now there's a freaking parking garage, you know? It's just...
Yeah, and that reminds me, I was... Today, after we went to where we went, I started looking up some history on it as well, and when it was built. Guess what year?
What did it say?
1890. And that's what it said last night.
I couldn't remember the... Yeah, that's crazy. That's crazy. I can't wait to show you guys the stuff that we got. It was so cool. Whether it's real or if it was just them messing with us the entire night, which some of it I don't see they can. Some of it, which we'll get into, we're like, yeah, that could have been them.
Yeah, there were some things that were questionable, but then there were some things that made me question reality.
It was so crazy.
It was.
I can't wait. And I don't know if we're going to release that next week or the week after, because I have to go through all the videos and pictures and everything. So I'm going to guess it's not going to be next Monday, but the following Monday we'll have it released.
That'll be our scary story episodes.
Yep, that'll work really good, too, because we can bring Seth and Tori and tell them about it, since they chickened out and didn't go with us.
That might be the perfect opportunity.
Yep. See us planning on air.
Yeah. Let us know what you think about
that. That's how we do. Okay, back to the bodies. What did I just say?
We were talking about having to drag all the people to the fire.
And that's where the parking garage stands, and mm-hmm. is where they believe they did the fires. Okay. It was later reported that they were running out of room for the bodies to be burned, so some were placed in the San Antonio River. This then caused further issues, and due to the amount of casualty, the resort...
Man.
Oh, my Lord. The river basically started to become clogged by all the bodies.
Imagine.
However, a descendant of the Alamo, Alf Carrera, would later say that he had documents saying the bodies were not disposed of in the river. It was against the town ordinance to dispose of the bodies of animals that way, so why would they dispose of human bodies that way? But to me, it's like, well, if you have that many bodies and you have nothing else to do with them,
mm-hmm.
I could see them doing that. Mm-hmm.
Not just that, but the law says animals, not people.
That's true. That's very true. He says the river was a lifeline at the time, and they knew it would cause issues. Carrera claimed to have documented proof that they didn't do it, but he passed away about 15 years ago, and he never was able to provide the documents. One theory is that the bodies were of injured soldiers, and they were basically trying to escape and go find help, but they would end up succumbing to their injuries in the river, which I'm sure there was a lot of that, too.
Oh, I guarantee you that happened.
The personal effects of the soldiers were believed to have been taken by the surviving Mexican soldiers as payment. This also may explain what happened to Jim Bowie's famous knife and the sword that William B. Travis used to draw the line in the sand. So they never found either of those things. Santa Ana allowed women, children, and a few enslaved people inside the mission to survive. Among them was Susan Dickinson, who was sent away to spread the word of what happened. News of the Alamo spread quickly across Texas and the United States, and instead of the crushing the rebellion, the battle had basically the opposite effect. The fallen defenders became martyrs of the Texian cause. Just 6 weeks later, Texian forces led by Sam Houston confronted Santa Anna's army at the Battle of San Jacinto on April 21st, 1836. Their battle cry echoed across the battlefield, "Remember the Alamo." The battle only lasted for 18 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Santa Anna's army was defeated, and the general himself was captured the following day. Soon after, Texas gained its independence from Mexico and became the Republic of Texas. Today, the Alamo still stands in San Antonio, visited by millions of people each year. But behind those quiet stone walls, in the memory of a desperate stand, impossible odds, and a battle that, despite ending in defeat, helped shape the history of Texas forever. But the story of the Alamo doesn't completely end in 1836. Because nearly two centuries later, people have claimed that the battle may have left behind more than just history. Some believe it left behind ghost. The Alamo sits in the heart of San Antonio, Texas, surrounded by modern buildings, busy streets, and thousands of tourists every day. But when the crowds leave and the gates close for the night, the staff and security guards say the atmosphere changes. Some reports hear footsteps echoing across the courtyard when no one's there. Others say they've heard what sounds like marching boots or faint voices, almost like soldiers moving through the mission grounds. And then there are the sightings. Visitors have reported seeing shadowy figures walking along the old stone walls, especially near the long barracks, one of the areas where some of the fiercest fighting took place during the final assault. One of the most commonly reported apparitions is believed by some to resemble Davy Crockett. Witnesses describe seeing the outline of a man dressed in buckskin near the barracks or standing near the courtyard at night before suddenly disappearing.
That'd be creepy.
That'd be really weird. Another eerie story involves the ghost of James Jim Bowie. Bowie was gravely ill during the siege and reportedly died in his bed. Some visitors claim to have felt a sudden cold spot or an intense feeling of unease in the room where the wounded soldiers were kept. But that could have been any of them. I mean, imagine the misery of sitting in that room. Others claim to hear faint sounds like metal clinking or distant gunfire late at night. Security guards over the years have also shared strange experiences. Some doors have closed on their own inside the historic buildings, and others have reported tools or objects moving during overnight restoration work, even when no one else is inside. One of the creepiest legends comes from years after the battle. But when you walk through the quiet courtyard today, past the old stone chapel and the thick mission walls, it's not hard to imagine the sounds of cannon fire, the shouts of soldiers, and the final moments of the men who made their stand in 1836. And that's the Alamo.
That is the Alamo.
That was my book report. Literally. Helping our son.
Yep.
We didn't include all that. His teacher might have been like, they did what with the dead bodies? We need to make a call. Yeah. Be right back.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love the history like that where you get to, even like the house that we've seen, just knowing some of the history of it. And then being in that spot, like this happened here so many years ago. And now I'm standing in that exact spot. It's a mind. It's mind fuck, basically. It's wild.
That it is. We may have to go a little deeper into the ghost story of the Alamo at some point, too.
I tried looking, and there's a few stories, but there wasn't a whole lot. There is one famous picture in the window of I think it was Davy Crockett that they think it is. How they get it's Davy Crockett, it literally just, like, it just looks like a figure standing there. So why they think it's Davy Crockett, I don't know, but
publicity.
Probably. But I couldn't find a whole lot of, like, really good stories. I did look, so I was going to try to include those, but there wasn't a whole heck of a lot. But I bet if we went and did the ghost tour, we could get a lot more.
Yeah. I'm kind of, now that we've done the one, I kind of want to do some more. That was a lot of fun.
For sure.
It was a whole lot of fun.
It was. Definitely be back. And we have other places on the list. I don't think we could do it once a month. I think that would be too much.
That's way too much.
A couple times a year.
Yeah.
It'd be a lot of fun.
Unless we get enough listeners that we can get sponsored to do things like that.
If you want to listen, share, rate, subscribe on all the things, it'll just help us reach our dream.
Yeah. And then eventually, we can do it full time.
Yeah. You can be a little ghost hunter for a living.
I don't know about a living. Because we're dealing with the dead.
Can't stand you. So, yep, that was it. Like I said, we didn't really, that week I didn't really know what to do, and I had to help our son with his report. So I was like, hey, let's look into it. And that's kind of what we wanted to do, is kind of learn some of the history that we didn't know. And
yep,
that was part of it. So I'm about halfway done with next week's episode, and it is a doozy. Like, you know, you don't want to say, you know, that one crime's worse than the other. It's a different kind of doozy. Like, it's not a, they killed 100 people. It's a few twists and turns and just one. This is, you know, I did that case of that detective that went above and beyond finding justice for those families. And this is a story of kind of the opposite of that. Mm-hmm. They did the bare minimum, and it's really an injustice to the family.
That happens a lot more than people think.
Yeah.
And it makes me sick.
Yeah. So.
But then on the other side of the coin, too, those places don't have the proper funding.
Mm-hmm.
Or the right things in place.
Or you just get that one bad apple. I mean, it could just be the bad apple.
That happens, too. But I think,
I don't think that, I'm not done with all the research, so I don't think it was just one bad apple. I think it's kind of like what you're saying. They just weren't trained like they should be. They seen an easy way out. Mm-hmm. How? And, you know, hindsight's 20/20, but they missed so much.
Yeah.
And it's just like, how could you do, even on the, I don't want to get into it because I'm going to give it too much away, but they literally didn't even know about all the wounds until the autopsy. And they weren't just like hidden wounds, like obvious wounds on this person's body. And they had no idea because they had one-track mind of what they thought it was. Mm-hmm. And so they're like, well, that's it. So we're done. Let's go. Pack it up. Let's go. And it was not, to me, allegedly, it was not that at all. So, it's a good story.
Yeah, we'll have to listen to that next week.
You better be here. Otherwise, I'm just going to be sitting here talking to nobody. Unless if I can get Tori in here or Seth. But Tori falls asleep half the time. And
I'm about to fall asleep.
Yeah, I know. We need to finish. I still got to edit. All right, guys. Well, we're excited to bring last night's fun. Mm-hmm. Got a good story for next week. We've got more plans coming up, more stuff to do. We're going to try to get a little bit ahead so we don't have to miss a week. We appreciate your patience. Keep liking, sharing, subscribing. You guys have been great. Send us your suggestions of any stories or topics you want us to cover. Send us your personal stories for our creepy tales.
Any kind of personal stories for creepy tales, whether it be aliens, Bigfoot, ghosts.
I also just like family drama. If you got some cool family drama, come spill the tea.
We don't have a platform for that, Audrey.
I can make a platform for that. I can do it. I will listen to your family tea all day long.
Anyway, thanks for listening to us.
I appreciate you guys. Tune in next week where the guilty confess
and the ghostly never rest.